Welcome to Tea Talks Podcast. Produced by Tomorrow London, Tea Talks is a podcast created to diversify the way that we think and talk about leading creative minds. A perfect blend of business and design, this 360-degree approach offers raw, unfiltered conversations with brand founders and directors on the rigorous duality that goes into building the fashion brands of tomorrow. My name is Valeria Garnica, and I am joined by VP of Sales and Business Development of Tomorrow, Marco Vianello, on this episode, where I interview Erin Esch, London designer and founder of the Erin Esch label. Erin,
hi.
Thank you so much for being here. Marco, you as well.
Pleasure.
Welcome to Tea Talks. Today I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation. This is the first episode of Tea Talks where we're actually going to look at a new angle. We're looking at sales. So really just merging that conversation that explores the relationship between design and sales and the business aspect of it, and the various activities that go into a brand to make it profitable. And so thank you so much for being here today. Marco, I think it would be great to start off by maybe introducing yourself and understanding what it is that you do, your relationship to Tomorrow, and your position in terms of the showrooms.
All right. Yeah, I am Marco. I am Vice President of Sales and Business Development at Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I've been in the company for almost 13 years, so it's been quite a long time.
Amazing.
And that has been a journey that brought me to this point, where there is about 30 talents that we represent within Tomorrow. My role is quite self-explanatory. So I look after the commercial business of Tomorrow across the board, and the business development in terms of emerging brands that come in, new talents that come in within the portfolio.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not just me. There is a great team that works on both aspects for sales and business development. And this is a nutshell, really. But the support that we give is mainly on, of course, the showroom sales and targeting and expanding the business on all sale level globally, because Tomorrow does mainly global business. And then there is another part, very important and very linked to our work, that is based on merchandising, pricing, and collection development.
Amazing. Very cool. And so now, Erin, emerging talent, founder of a brand, I would love it if you could give us a little bit of a rundown on Erin Esch, the brand, and how that got started. And maybe then we can hear about your relationship to each other and how Tomorrow and the showrooms and the wholesale part of it have been working with Erin Esch, the brand.
Sure. I'm Erin. Founded Erin Esch 2022 after graduating from St. Martin's. We've done our fifth collection, second show at London Fashion Week, just finished. Been working with Marco and Tomorrow since school, basically, leaving school. I think we've got a intro through Charles a week after my MA show. I've been very sort of close, become friends, colleagues with Marco specifically and kind of wider team at Tomorrow. Didn't really know what a showroom was, mm-hmm. or what a brand director was,
yeah.
or what wholesale really entailed, and have felt very sort of protected and guided through my relationship specifically with Marco.
Yeah. And so how did that relationship come to be? So you are at school, you've done your first collection, is that correct?
Yeah. So you do like a graduate collection.
Right.
And I was on the master's at St. Martin's, which part of your graduation collection is that you show at Fashion Week. Charles was my neighbor.
Yeah.
And I got a text being like, I need to introduce you to Marco. I had interest to buy my graduate collection from a few buyers, actually. And we kind of met. Where I can't even remember where we met the first
Yeah,
time. Do you remember?
I think it was definitely through Charles Jeffrey, who is another amazing talent of tomorrow. And Charles said exactly that. I have this, you should really meet my neighbor, just done his MA graduation at Centro San Martin, and he shares the profile with me. And I started already following Aaron because I saw some of the images of the show at Centro San Martin's and was particularly captivated by the shoe that he developed. So I kind of like
The
that
comma
re
shoe.
correct. And and so I was like, oh my God, yes, actually, I was like, my reaction was like, oh, absolutely. I mean, I obviously value a lot Char's opinion, but it kind of happened in a moment where I really wanted to meet this person, so I really wanted to meet Aaron. And although I think it was in fact during Fashion Week, so for us it's normally a very busy time, but we met right a few days after, and Aaron comes with this amazing aura of himself, and there's a big world that he brings with him. And so, I understood straight away that it was not just a shoe, there was so much more behind that. And I just said to him, I remember, we are in the middle of market now, so we're gonna start, and everything is set in the showroom. I don't have much space to give or anything to do, but since you already have some interest, and I think the collection is, yes, it's quite early stages, but it's ready to be presented. Just come to our office and show the collection here, and I'll call some buyers that I know that are in town just to show it. And they said, out of our, conversation, it was without any sort of partnership or contract. We just did it very
And they bought it.
generously, and they bought
Amazing.
it.
I mean, I had like, I genuinely had no fabric. It was like the fabric that I've used on my MA collection was from like the bin.
From the school.
Yeah, from the school. I had no grader. I had no factory. And they bought it. And I was like, okay, well, I guess this is what I'm doing now. Like,
Unbelievable. And so, fast forward to now, you have established your brand. You're a few seasons in. And you say that, when you first started this, you really had no idea what a showroom was. You had no guidance really through this process. So now that you're a little bit more established as a designer and as the founder of your brand, tell me, how do sales work? You design a collection, you go through the production, you show the collection, and then what happens?
I guess the kind of process of designing it can, I'm kind of still in this, how to describe it, tumble dryer of designing something, knowing that has it is commercial. This is a commercial, like this is a commercial process, right? Ultimately, because if I'm going to pay my rent and I'm going to pay my staff, like it has to make some sort of commercial money. So when you design something, there has to be that aspect to it. But also on the other side, it has to fit into the world that you're creating or proposing. So there's always that kind of two things that when we sit down and do the prices or build the range, there's like, oh, this is maybe a bit too commercial, or this is maybe a bit not commercial enough. So when we finish the collection or design it, sorry, it goes to a showroom and the buyers buy it. And we then make everything in London. So it's quite a small operation, I guess, at the moment. But I think that I've just found that the process with you specifically going and you have crits when you're at school that is like giving you feedback on like the design of something, where now it's like, how does this fit into a range plan in a pricing wise? Does the fabric make sense? Is the fabric what's the margins or the costings like to make this into a commercially viable product? how many do we envisage to sell of them? If we envisage to sell X amount of them, this makes sense from a margin point of view.
Yeah.
If does this, is this something that can carry on to see next season or the season after and become like a core range product? So there's lots of like different factors into building a collection like that. I think the last one I did, it was the first time that I started really wide and open to doing like a little knitted Henley that you could probably, it was very commercial, but it was almost like a, I don't know, ironically commercial. It was like a, just a very basic product, but it was beautifully made.
Wow.
To doing some much more sort of special pieces. So, it's kind of still a work in progress of doing that. And I think if you're working for a big house or a big brand, you have to, I guess that's something that's a big part of creative director's job, that we don't, like, it, this is a new process for me, understanding that, because as much as I'm as a designer, I'm a, you know, small business owner, entrepreneur, and that this is my job to, you know, build that season on season.
For sure, for sure. And so I think that's kind of where you step in, Marco, and your role. So can you respond to that and how you go into that process and really support brands like Aaron's?
Of course. And I think, you know, you need to bear in mind that the collection that Aaron just delivered is like his fourth collection. So we're really at the beginning stages of his brand life cycle. And commercial, obviously, from coming from a commercial guy, I can only say that commerciality is super important. Yeah. But you may be surprised also to the fact that at this stage, for me, it is important, but not as important as it would be in a few years' time, meaning that Aaron is still exploring his DNA, and there is a very strong vision. And normally, especially for directional brands like his, at the beginning of the journey, it is more important for that vision to come stronger and stronger despite the commerciality of the product.
Mm-hmm.
As he said, though, I think there is, you know, we're not going fast, but definitely we are in a trajectory where you can already identify what in his collection has already commercial potential. And that's a very good sign, obviously. There are certain brands that perhaps don't find that after three seasons, or don't find that after multiple seasons, you know, like after years. I think within the range of Aaron, within the collection, we know where are the categories where we should push, and we know where the commercial wise, and knowing that there is definitely appetite in the market for that to be taken without compromising, you know, the image of the brand or its creativity overall.
I think
guidance there is not to affect his creativity, it's just to, again, guide him to find his creativity also into a range that can be profitable and can sustain the business, you know. Right.
And so how does that reflect when you're in the showroom with a buyer? So, you know, because you kind of just walked us through your process with Aaron.
Sure.
But when you actually have that collection, for example, this past season, in the AW24 showrooms, what is that relationship with the buyer? What are you trying to communicate to the buyer about these collections?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's, you know, it's Aaron, I think, slowly but surely is getting known in the industry. So sometimes the introduction is not necessarily needed, but, you know.
Congrats.
But when we started, you know, it was a big introduction to be given, you know, because I would like, as he said, he was a student coming out of Central St. Martin's. So then obviously, you know, there is a bit of that explanation of who he is and what he's creating and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now, you know, I think now it's a little bit different. So for the Auto Winter 24 showroom was perhaps less introductions had to be made, and perhaps there was more focus on the collection and on the developments. I think in the accessories part, as we mentioned earlier, there is always been a bit of a focus, and this time around we had the first bag. The first bag was introduced, so there was definitely, you know, a wider range to be shown.
Mm-hmm.
as you can imagine, the caps are also quite strong, as we both are wearing it right now. And there is, you know, there is definitely a strong range of accessories. But as Aaron mentioned, you know, the collection, what we like, what the team does, what myself does, it's just showing the passion that we have for this collection, for the brand, and started showing the developments from previous seasons to this season for those that have been monitoring it, and for those that don't know it, showing the silhouettes, the cuts, and the materials, because as Aaron has mentioned earlier, you know, this season there were the aesthetic anyway in generally for the brand is quite clean and minimal, but it was a superlative this time around, and so it was really important for the team and myself to show it on a model, to show them how it looked and, you know, how it moved, and so that's kind of like what we do in the showroom, you know, try to bring these clothes alive.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure. And would you say that that's kind of the goal that you have when interacting with the buyer, really bringing that collection to life?
I think yes. At this point, you know, we just want to make sure that Aaron hits all the doors and the accounts that are capable and understand this type of product.
Yeah.
And the goal now, yes, is to enter, and the quantity is not necessarily, of course, is always important, the quantity, don't get me wrong, but in this specific moment, the quality is more important than the quantity, you know.
It's been like that from the beginning, though. It's absolutely like really like curating who we work with, rather than it being a case of like, let's go into 100 stores. Like, that's not good. Doesn't make sense for anyone to do that.
Absolutely.
And like, the one thing I found from you is that like, you're so, like, your taste, we're aligned taste wise in terms of partners that we're going to work with, whether that's like actually individual buyers and them specifically as people, or the accounts and the stores being like, is this a good fit for growth? And I've really appreciated that, because I guess that, that's how I work in my job anyway, you know. Like, I don't know, we don't give many clothes to like red carpet or editorial, really, because we're so specific with who we want to work with.
For
that
sure.
There's that kind of brand image that we're curating that feels controlled, and I think that we're doing that with the stores that we're located in as well, and that it's actually good sometimes to be like, this doesn't really make sense.
Absolutely.
For the image. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like right now you're in the process of establishing a basis for the brand and that foundation. And then over time, it's going to start to develop and take its own form. Aaron, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
So in an interview, you mentioned that getting any startup off the ground, like your business, let alone a fashion brand that only sells twice a year to wholesale and that, no offense, has shit margins, is very difficult. I sense a lot of frustration from this comment. Can you walk us through the challenges of entering a market during this time?
I made like a very specific decision to not do like direct to consumer from the very start, because I kind of saw this as it's as much as a wholesale business as it was a sort of marketing opportunity to position yourself in places that you aligned with from a sort of fashion branding context. But the challenge with that is that it does have bad margins, and it does have bad margins when you're making something that is well made. So when you want a great craftsman to make you a beautiful tailored jacket with British wool and cotton lining and Savile Row acetate sleeves, and you want to sell that jacket for retail for under €1,000, like, the truth is you make no money on that jacket. But the jacket's so important to be there because of the image of the brand and because of the range plan curation that like, has to be there. So you're spending 6 months designing, tailoring that has such bad margins but so important for your brand identity, that it's really difficult to have a startup that this is the business strategy, because it has really good long-term potential to do what know, we've just been talking about, to grow into something that has loads of units from department stores for specific pieces, but to get there is difficult.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I need to build my team, and to build my team, I need to pay them, and to pay them, I need to have cash, and to have cash, I need to have orders, and I need the stores to pay, and I need them to pay on time, and mm-hmm. then, you know, it's a really difficult thing to manage. So I think if I there's times I feel like if I knew how the scale of the task to do this when I was at school, I'd have maybe thought twice.
And so what would your ideal sales scenario look like? Would you consider adopting direct-to-consumer into your brand?
I mean, sure. But like doing direct-to-consumer is like has to be done well as well.
Right? Mm-hmm.
You need to sell it, and you need to ship it on time. It needs to be well packaged. It needs to have a customer service email. It needs to be, if returned, be dealt with, and like that's a whole separate part of the business that like I've never done before. So, you know, it's all well and good putting some stuff on the internet and selling it through Instagram, but mm-hmm. like has to be done well.
Yeah,
the same kind of level of precision that goes into every other part of my brand.
Yeah,
so that's just costs money. So, yeah, I would. I think at the moment I feel comfortable working with the clients that we work with, because I actually feel like there's kind of synergy there in belief in the brand. And, you know, we've done a really small show last time. It had like very small amount of buyers, really, compared, had 100 seats.
Yeah.
It was like 30 buyers, just nothing, right? Spend all that time and money doing a show and you invite 30 buyers. But the 30 buyers that we invited, there was like almost personal relationship with them in terms of belief, I felt like, with me personally in the brand, that like these are like, I want to extend that kind of circle of relationships with wholesalers to grow kind of in an organic long-term way, rather than just ultimately, you know, just be selling season on season. And then if it does well, it does well. If it doesn't, like it doesn't. I don't want it to be like that. I want it to kind of be a kind of synergy between two parties growing together. So that's how I see it at the moment. And it's just making it to the end of the season and doing it again next time. And,
yeah.
you know, however we do that, it's just a hustle at the moment to make it happen, because the economic climate's shit, and like you know, no one, it's bad for everyone. It's not just bad for me.
No, for sure. And so Marco, I would love for you to respond to this. I mean, is this a common sentiment amongst emerging designers? What is the market looking like right now?
Absolutely, yeah, it is very difficult right now, and it's definitely a common pattern that everybody in the industry is really facing, from bigger brands to smaller brands. But of course, the smaller brands are the ones that ultimately suffered the most, because it's if somebody's late in payments, obviously the priorities goes for the bigger brands and not necessarily for the smaller brands. And mm-hmm. and so it's a circle that unfortunately impacts then payments, you know, that the brands will need to make for to their suppliers and mm-hmm. manufacturers and so on. So again, you already put in, not emerging designers are not put normally on the top of the list, so when payments come a little later, also they're even more on the bottom, and that implies later deliveries, which implies a lower amount of time, a shorter amount of time in the shop floor at a full price. And so as a consequence,
it's orders next time. And like, you know, if it's late, sell through is lower. And then next time they're like, well, it didn't sell through, but like we delivered late because we couldn't get out of the factory.
Yeah.
Like, and anyone listening to this, I don't know, that's does understand in terms of the process. It's like the one thing that you don't pay 30 days for is the factory. I don't know. Anyone, other people that have their brand out there, if you've got a factory that has 30-day payments, please email me. Like, my factory does not take a 30-day payment, right? So I get paid my deposit, and 4 months later, the clothes are ready to sell.
Yeah.
But I got a big amount of money that I got to pay the factory. And until there's such a, like, big cash payment, cash flow issue there, and it must be like this for every brand, but as a fashion brand, this is the one issue that when you're doing wholesalers, there's that cash flow issue to release the clothes from the factory.
Mm-hmm.
And it has meant there's been times where we've been late, which has affected our kind of long-term strategy because it's less time up for, you know, full price in the delivery windows for the store. So it's a real struggle to do that because, you know,
for sure.
Like, finding the money, like, no one cares, you know, like, it's you just got to find it and make it happen. And, like, this is my job is, I'd say more than 50% is hustling to make that happen.
The exact reasons why we got to here, you know, I think it's really being trapped in a system,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes questioning the system.
Yeah.
As in many other industry.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a long history of wholesalers that have been really successful launching brands.
So that was my other question. On the flip end of things, can you walk us through the benefits
for sure
of this process?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when this happened, though, you know, I think the competition was a little bit less aggressive. And I think, you know, price points overall were also you know, there were many collections that I think overall the competition was less aggressive, and so also in terms of price points, everything was also more achievable. I mean, mm-hmm. more reachable. Not everything, but for the majority of those brands, and now everything tends to be more expensive because of all the macroeconomic issues that we're experiencing right now, from after COVID to today. But the benefit and Brexit being one of those, particularly in this country, exactly. So Brexit being one of the major reasons, absolutely. They said there are definitely positives in doing wholesale, and that's why we're here, right? And I think, you know, as Aaron has mentioned, you know, the e-commerce part, the direct-to-consumer part requires a certain level of investment that not many brands have.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine to do it on a brick-and-mortar level. You know, there is no, you know, it's hard for them to have the investment of opening a store in their cities. And, you know, so it's the wholesale allow you to have a brick-and-mortar representation with this way smaller investment than doing on your own, right? Yeah. And so, believe it or not, I've always been a huge believer of shopping in real life. And of course, the online in the last 20 years have taken an amazing journey. But today, with everything that is happening in the market, with these big marketplaces and online players, we actually, I think we're all coming to realize that, especially for luxury, the in-person experience is definitely still very, very important.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, the benefits of wholesale allow you to be in different stores across the globe. So, you know, all around the globe.
In real life. And, like, you know, I think online's important now, but, like, I don't shop online. I used to. I shop on Vestiaire and on First Dibs. And, like, it's vintage that I buy online, but I never buy anything. Well, I'd, like, very rarely now even look. I think post-COVID, it's, like, that online experience, there's one or two stores that I'll go to look at, but it's very rare that I think consumers have changed their habits. And actually people is talking about, like, things having high low sell through, like, I would assume that things that people see in real life are much more tangible to buy.
Absolutely.
It feels more convincing to see it in real life, and especially with my brand, I think that's one of the aspects that I think is really important. But I agree. I think, like, post COVID, it's like having that wholesale accounts to be worldwide in stores where people can pick it up, put it on, see the inside, see the stitching, like...
Especially for the more luxurious product, right? Which is what Aaron is creating.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Row has like one of the highest sell throughs.
Correct.
And it's the most expensive. Yeah. But it's because it's beautiful. So when you pick it up, you want to buy it and you want to take it home with you. And it's like, you know, it doesn't matter about the price. It's people want to pick up this beautiful cashmere coat and they'll pay for it because they see it in real life. And like seeing that through a screen. And then, like, but then there's other, like, Phoebe starts her brand and it's all direct to consumer. Mm-hmm. But you can tell that she's so, it's so considered how it's seen through a screen. It, like, how it's shot, how the e-com is presented on the website, how the website is designed. Like, it's so considered because you can see that she's seeing it through, this is not just, like, product shot, buy, checkout, see you later. Like, this is an experience for her, and she's able to take in the whole margin of the product.
Absolutely. But I also think, like, you know, the client has history with Phoebe, right? So I think for an emerging brand, it's very different because they don't know you, you know? So they don't necessarily take the risk of, you know. So there is that. And then don't forget about production also, because if you, when you handle a direct-to-consumer business, you know, especially at this stage with very limited resources, it's a bet. So, you know, you don't necessarily...
Well, you wouldn't buy it, you wouldn't make it up front and hold stock. Like, where do you hold the stock? So, like, and then otherwise you do, I don't know, would you spend £1,000 on a jacket and wait 6 months from an emerging brand? Probably not. Like, you might have a few people that do, but, like, most probably not. And it's also not a great business model to, you know, make people wait 6 months to or however many months to receive something. So you're kind of stuck in a catch-22 there.
Yeah.
So wholesale has great benefits, and of course the direct to consumer is something that we also, as Tomorrow, we encourage at one point, but it needs to be done carefully, and obviously it requires some investment.
Yeah. Aaron, you have had immense success in the short time that your brand has been around. You had your first inaugural London Fashion Week show at the Tate Modern, which is absolutely amazing. This was last September 2023. And you were also selected as one of the most prestigious 2023 LVMH Prize semifinalists. So congratulations on that. You've gained a lot of attention from buyers, like we spoke about today. And so I'm curious, can you share with us a little bit more about your most recent collections and what you are trying to communicate now and going forward to your consumers?
Yeah, so we've done the first show at the Tate, which I hate when that's mentioned, because it's like, I so didn't want to do it there because it's so like gimmicky that that's the talking point. It wasn't about it being at the Tate. It was, we found this room at the Tate that had never been used for a show before, and it had like really awful floor and chipped walls, but it was in this kind of overlooking St. Paul's. That's why we did the show there. And I think like that's, I think my brand's not about like gimmick or celeb. It's really about fashion and a point of view that is about kind of taking classicism and contemporary youth culture from like a London lens and mixing them two things together. So I think that's why that room in the Tate made sense, because it fitted into that world that I guess I'm proposing. The latest collection was at the Sarah Brown Foundation, where my studio is at, and it was super small. And it was kind of an extension from that first collection in terms of the menswear and the womenswear and the world and the casting and the hair and the makeup and the walk and the pose and the music and the cigarettes at the front door and all them kind of aspects that... this world building exercise that I'm on at the moment. I think making it convincing for the consumer, for the buyers, for the editors, for the models, for my everyone viewing the work, whether that is there in person or through a iPhone screen is the journey I'm on at the moment. And I don't know, you said it was successful, I guess so, relatively, in like, you know, we've done LVMH and it went really well, and, you know, at Fashion Week it's going well, but I guess I'm kind of seeing it through whether it's successful or not. It's, I feel really kind of happy with the work that we're putting out there, and I'm excited to just do the next one now.
That's amazing. And you also, I mean, you have women's wear now, which is super exciting. Is that something that is somehow related to sales? Is that something that came from securing, you know, the profitability of your brand, or how did that happen?
It was very genuine.
Yeah, it's just very genuine. We kind of had it. It's kind of about sales, I guess. Like, I just thought half of the people that were buying our menswear were women. So I was like, okay, well, we might as well give them a women's product. To me, it just feels more convincing when it's the women's wear too. That's it. It's not, you know, it's not about, it wasn't particularly like this contrived decision. It was like, you know, you put the women's wear in, then it just made sense. And I think when it was men's wear, it felt niche in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there is this part of Aaron that goes into like finding the very feminine side of a man. Mm-hmm. And that's very difficult for men in general to admit that feminine side, you know? So I think
I don't know if it's feminine. It's like there's a softness to the men's
softness, wear. Absolutely.
Yeah. So like there's a softness to the men's wear that came across as feminine.
Okay.
And like, you know, you'd have an article at a magazine and it'd be like something to do with like gender identity, which I think is a really important subject, but it wasn't really what I was saying at all. Mm-hmm. And then when you add the women's wear in, then it then just makes sense, because there's this kind of cohesiveness throughout the boys and the girls that feels just very real, you know? And I think that was the reason that we did at the start. And I think it has been a massive success.
It feels real and modern. It feels like today, you know, and so.
For sure. And so, you know, that being said, what do you hope to see in terms of the development of the brand, and where would you want the brand to go from here on out?
I just want it to exist for a long time. I watched a Jonathan Anderson interview, like a really old one. He was like, I just want my brand to exist for a long time. And like, I just really resonate with that.
Yeah.
I don't want this to be something that like, it has to have longevity, and I don't want to rely on one day working for someone else. I want to build my business the same way that I see the really successful people I admire, designers, build their businesses. I want to work with people that I trust and that feel like extended family almost now, whether that's through sales or my PR or my team directly, and kind of grow all together to create something that kind of feels like a foundation of London and part of the system here for a long time. And like, that's a big task. And I guess that's why I go into work every day and with that in my mind.
That's amazing, Aaron. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marco.
Pleasure.